Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Digiday podcast. I'm your co-host, Kamika McCoy, senior marketing reporter here at Digiday.
And I'm Kaylee Barber, media editor at Digiday.
Kaylee, we have made it through another week. How's your Friday starting off so far?
You know, it's the last Friday before our Digiday Publishing Summit kicks off next week. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling excited. I am feeling like I'm losing my mind. So there's some good and there's some bad here, but yeah, soon I'll be in a mountain somewhere in Colorado, and hopefully that'll, I don't know, get me back into gear, have some alignment there. How are you doing?
I love that. Be careful of skinwalkers. I've been seeing them on TikTok a lot, actually.
What? What?
Apparently out in the Appalachian Mountains, they have something called skinwalkers where like they're like ghosts or something like that.
Okay, that feels very Appalachia. Yeah. Okay. I'm hoping Colorado Rockies, maybe they have it, like they have like Yetis or something, right? Like the big feet.
Yeah. Loch Ness Monster too. Foots.
Yeah. Loch Ness Monster. I know, shows up there all the time.
Seems like a much safer bet. Anyways, I had a transition planned, but I'm actually just going to jump right into it. So you talked to somebody very interesting who, or a company, a media company that's very interesting, given that their business model kind of is front and center on Substack, which is interesting, especially given today's landscape. But you talked to Janice Min, CEO and founder of The Ankler, about their business on Substack and some of their advertising strategies. So fill me in.
Yeah, it was actually a really, really fun conversation with Janice. We talked about, you know, award season and how four-year consideration revenue has really helped bolster The Ankler the past several months, as we're kind of wrapping up award season now. And given the fact that like the entertainment industry had that obvious like impact by two different strikes happening at the same time, I was wondering how a media company that's focused on the business of entertainment like was having an impact on their revenue. But turns out she said it hasn't really had a very big impact at all, at least not yet. But that's largely because four-year consideration is like their bread and butter. That's going to be a huge part of their revenue this year. And then the streamers are also still spending a lot of money trying to get like audiences to their content and stuff like that. So, and like subscriptions and things like of that nature too. So it's been actually a pretty good year for them so far. I mean, I know we're only in March, but even the past, like end of last year wasn't too bad. But being on Substack, Substack had recently, when we had this conversation, announced they were adding some sort of advertising functionality to their platform to help creators sell ads on their products, which historically Substack was designed to move journalists out of the rat race of advertising. So that was kind of like a reversal of their strategy. And Janice said that like, while it's something that they might test, ultimately, like it's not necessarily like how they sell ads now. They're very direct. So yeah, time will tell. We also talk a little bit about having a, you know, owned and operated presence and how their website right now is based on Substack. It might move later. Time will tell. But anyway, it was a really fun conversation. We talk also about like entertainment and stuff like that too. So we kind of go off script a little bit from like the business chit chat, but it was a really fun conversation.
I love that. I love that. Sounds like you got a good juicy scoop with Janice. So with no further ado, I'll let you get to it.
Janice, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm good. What about you?
Doing well. We are recording this Friday, February 16th. So I know our listeners are catching this conversation a little bit later, but it is Friday for me. It's sunny here in New York. Well, I'm in New Jersey. Don't tell anyone.
Yeah, you say that with such shame. No, no, no.
It's the Jersey City, New York kind of beef that some like to take. And so I can't accurately claim New York, but I see palm trees behind you. So you are definitely based in California.
I am definitely in Los Angeles, and it is for once, which is a funny thing to say, not raining in Los Angeles. So gorgeous weekend is awaiting.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Gorgeous weekend. I'm excited to have some downtime. But thank you for joining the podcast. I am excited to chat with you. And it's, I guess, coincidental that I saw Press Gazette had just published an interview with you earlier this week. And in that, there were some numbers shared. So that is helpful for the purposes of this conversation. But I guess to kick it off, I would love to, I saw in that report from Press Gazette that you're eyeing about $10 million in revenue this year. And I would love to kind of open this up by asking how you're planning to get to that number, that figure.
So I want to just be clear. I was eyeing $10 million, and the story does say this. I was eyeing $10 million for 2025. I think we have a shot of getting to that number this year. And so the way we're going to do it, and it's so boring. I wish we had some AI generated something that was going to be like the thing that rains down millions of dollars on us, but it's really boring. It's content that people want to pay to subscribe to, and content attractive enough to attract enough advertisers who want to pay to be aligned with your audience. And then the third leg of that is events. And that's something we started to get into last year and was incredibly successful for us, and we will continue to do this year. But I'm waiting for the fourth leg, not the stool, I guess the chair, that, yes, that rains down the miracle money that makes media great for everybody again.
Yeah, I think that's the very much shared mentality amongst every media, especially digital media company these days. Yeah, I guess not just digital, like every, because print's not doing well either. Yeah.
It's funny because, you know, we cover the entertainment space here, and there's so many, particularly the cable TV space and the linear TV space here is so analogous to publishing. They just happen to make a lot more money doing it on the way up than than publishing did on the way up. And they are still throwing off lots of money, but certainly not. There's no growth plan. There's no growth trajectory for those companies. And, you know, I think the thing then when I think about that out here, and I think the dire predictions are that some of these channels either die or get acquired by hedge funds or private equity to squeeze out the last money and then disappear. So anyway, I hope publishing is not entirely analogous to that, but I definitely see parallels.
Well, it's difficult because it's content we need. And how is it going to be funded is the big question these days. Okay, so in that report, though, there was this, piece where it's like, as of now, so as of like mid-February, you're up 75% in revenue from this time last year.
Can I amend that number? Okay. It's actually 79% as of today. So I'm going to brag where I can brag because we so rarely get to brag in publishing. So I'm bragging.
Absolutely. So is that like from an advertising standpoint, is that like subscribers? Like what's the kind of...
Both. But I will tell you, to have a jump that high, it's largely due to advertising. And let's see, I think in the first 6 weeks of this year, we have more advertising revenue than we did in the entire first year of the company in 2022. So it's nice momentum. And I think I will give ourselves credit for that growth, but also we had no advertising when we started. And we started with Amazon as our launch partner in 2022. So we did have sponsorship and advertising, but we felt we only have room to go up, and we weren't facing, 20-year historic figures.
That's fair too. It's funny because like some publishers' earnings that are happening right now, like they're showing either small increases or, you know, year over year kind of changes that might look positive. But when you look back to like 2021, it's a different story. Like even the past year, the advertising space has been so pressed that, you know, it does kind of change the numbers a little bit. But I am curious, like, is it different advertiser categories that are coming on? Are you like offering different kinds of sponsorships, or like what's the...
So when we launched, we just had our marquee writer, the person I joined up to do this with, is this, I would say, Hollywood's most influential columnist. His name is Richard Rushfield, and he was writing about entertainment once a week. If you were lucky, he wasn't exactly keeping the schedule. And So we did some pretty simple things. Like we put them on a schedule. Obviously, advertisers want to know when their ads are running and you have to sell against your editorial calendar. But then we immediately added other products into the mix, other newsletters, other things that were more focused on different parts of the entertainment industry. And so we increased our inventory. And so we started out the year, started out our launcher in 2022. I already mentioned Amazon Studios was our launch partner. And then fast forward to 2 years later today, we have, you know, Netflix, Apple, Warner Brothers. I mean, we have everybody. There's not any major player in the industry who is not advertising. It is currently, we have both TuneIn advertising, which is, you know, come see this movie coming out, but we also have what's called for your consideration advertising, which for your audience who has never been in advertising or editorial out here in Los Angeles, it is the probably one of the last protected classes of advertising in the ad space, because you can't have Google steal it. Facebook advertising can't take it, because all they want, these studios and streamers, is to reach this very specific audience. And they want to control the message. They want to know it's in the right environment. And so there is no CPM. It's just sort of this sense and belief that you are reaching the quote unquote right people, which in this case out here are voters, people who vote for Oscars, which is the season we're currently in. And the Oscars, by the time your audience listens to this, will have just happened, hopefully without a slap or incident. And then also then Emmys. But the awards calendar is a sort of incredible thing where even in the age of streaming, where you can have everything all the time and people thought it might be the end of awards, it did the exact opposite, which is it increased the interest in awards. And anyone who's ever seen a picture of Jeff Bezos or Ted Sarandos or Tim Cook on a red carpet at an awards show can tell you right there that it is important to them. The prestige factor is something that they like, I would say personally, but also as a way to market their platforms.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have a lot of questions about like entertainment media, entertainment advertising, considering what happened, you know, last year with all the strikes and everything. So there's still a lot of money being spent like on for your consideration, as you mentioned. And it sounds like, you know, streamers and studios saying like, hey, check out this new, you know, movie that we have coming out. Did the strikes lead to any impact in ad spend, or do you think that's coming based on like the delays that could have been to programming?
I think a funny phenomenon happens is happening here, where the strikes were horrible. They went on 6 months. I mean, almost unthinkable at the outset. And so it did coincide with an award spending season around Emmys. And it was, we were up. I would think we would have been up more. And people were scared. They didn't know what was going to happen. But when the strike ended that day that Fran Drescher and the Screen Actors Guild and the AMPTP, the organization representing the studios and streamers, the day they reached their agreement, it felt like the dam broke. And not only do you see celebrities going to every single event you could ever imagine. Some of you probably saw Oprah dancing at the Grammys, Meryl Streep in the audience. I mean, people who typically don't go to the Grammys. And I went to the Critics' Choice Awards, which were on the CW, and they got exactly 1 million viewers. And the audience, I think they probably had the most starry audience in its history. And so I think the strikes had this effect of sort of Hollywood coming back with a vengeance, saying we want to be more Hollywood. We don't want to be taken over by sports, which is kind of happening. We want to prove to the world that we are the things that make entertainment special. And TikTok can't replace it. Sports can't replace it. You know, your Instagram reels are not going to be professional like what we do. And so I think part of that accounts actually for our huge increase so far this year.
That makes a lot of sense, because what the last strike was, that kind of renaissance of reality TV, right? Like that's where a lot of the Keeping Up Withs and, you know, family drama oriented shows. That's where they really kind of.
That's very nice of you to say family oriented drama shows.
Dramas centered around one family. Yeah. I would not recommend kids watch these shows, but
no,
family dramas.
Yeah, that was a huge moment, like a huge turning point in entertainment. And if people thought that was disruptive, you know, streaming became even more disruptive. And then sort of the existential threats of facing entertainment in generally, I mean, I think it really sent people into a terror here, that it could, and this is the first time you really heard people talking about, like, this could all go away. And I have a friend who works in entertainment who was always talking about during the strikes in the depths of despair, this what's going to stop Los Angeles from becoming the next Detroit when big automotive was suffering. It was a little hyperbolic, but potentially not wrong, because entertainment is selling image and this sort of fairy dust. And without that, it is a little, it could become Detroit with autos. Yeah.
Yeah. The Hollywood glamour kind of loses its shine if, you know, it, I think that was the big thing, right? Is like the increase of AI being able to generate content and then also just the pure mass of creator generated content on TikTok, on, you know, YouTube and things like that. Like, there's so much content competing for audiences' attention and only so many, you know, people that can give that attention, that it does have a scary thing about it.
It absolutely does. And you're also seeing with the return post-strike that a lot of your audience has probably heard about these headlines about the decrease in scripted television. We were in this peak TV era, and that has now, we are now well off peak TV. And some of it is these scripted television shows that streaming rose on are super expensive, and people aren't really watching them that much. And it was interesting. We did an interview the other day with John Landgraf, who runs FX, and FX does all this prestige programming. Probably a lot of listeners here love, like, The Bear, Reservation Dogs. And he just said, though, the prestige market is, there is a ceiling, and it's a pretty low ceiling on who is going to watch that stuff. And it's the most expensive ceiling you can build, and to populate everything under the ceiling. So I think you'll probably see there's a crazy thing happening now where you can, the only projects getting bought and sold are what are called A-list packages, where everyone's so fearful about making sure something works, so the agencies or the management companies will put together a big star you've heard of, a big director, and prepackage it all up. And then that's where, like, an Amazon or Netflix will buy it. And there was one we were joking was almost like, it felt like AI generated. It was like Sylvester Stallone, a script and the movie starring Jason Statham, directed by David Ayers. And it was like, I'm going to mangle some of this, but, like, you know, a cop who gave up his job but suddenly gets drawn in one last time after his colleague's daughter is kidnapped. But, like, that's the stuff that's selling right now. So, you know, it's not the superhero stuff that I think is on the wane, but it will be this other form of literally packaging that is going to fill the void in entertainment. We'll probably see that over the next few years.
Feel like a AI Mad Lib almost now with, like, you know.
Okay, we're stealing that, Kaylee. AI Mad Lib, because that
you're please do.
Yeah, that you're 100% right.
Also, yeah, the Marvel hype, well, superhero in general does seem to have, like, a kind of slowdown. But I am curious. So, like, after, like, getting back into advertising, the 4-year consideration season ends at, like, what, mid Q2 or end of Q1, or, like,
it will end about, like, 10 days before the Oscars have aired. So for Oscars advertising, and then Emmys season ramps up.
So, like, what does your kind of, like, summer season and, like, you know, Q3 look like in terms of advertising? And could there be an issue at that point with, like, you know, the delays in programming leading to, like, dips in, I don't know, like,
I'm impressed you know the FYC calendar, by the way, Kaylee, but I'm not surprised.
My favorite season is awards, to quote Moira Rose.
Oh, really? Oh, my God. Okay. Wow. You're living in the...
I like watching them.
Yeah, you're living in wrong end of the wrong coast.
I know.
So we are going to do tune-in advertising, but also we believe a big opportunity for us is in consumer advertising, given the profile of our audience. And our audience, we did a survey of our audience. I think a quarter of our audience makes over $500,000 a year. And this was a play when I ran the Hollywood Reporter that we exercised really well, which was getting luxury and automotive and financial services into the Hollywood Reporter. And so we have so much of our audience are the quote unquote decision makers, the C-suite of the industry. So we believe that, we believe there is a big opportunity for us to connect that audience with brands.
And so I guess, are you starting to do like a different kind of like, what is it called? Like go-to-market approach?
Yes. So we have several sales decks, and it depends on where you sit. So we obviously have the awards sales deck. We have the Emmy sales deck that is in market while people are listening right now. And then we also have the consumer deck, which just talks more about the quality of our audience and the importance of them. I think certainly my belief in our head of sales, London Sanders, is it's a compelling story when we tell it to people and they respond that we've seen how scale advertising and publishing is faring right now. And both of us, London and I, both came from the traditional trades, Hollywood Reporter for me and Deadline for her. And you see that advertisers are paying for a lot of traffic that has nothing to do with the audience you're trying to reach. And some of it is also just that churn of like, we're going to try to capitalize on every trend on Twitter and what people are searching for on Google. And so one thing, and you said this in the beginning, Kaylee, like that everyone wants to create, it costs money. Everyone wants to create quality content. And obviously the scale, chasing scale and programmatic advertising did not always go hand in hand with that. So we like the idea of just telling you, we know exactly who our audience is. We know how to reach them. And, your message won't get stuck in some, trending topic about Taylor Swift.
Also, being a newsletter like centric publisher in, podcasts too, but like having that direct, connection to readers, knowing like, who they are, if they signed up with their work email, where they work, like that is really like helpful in getting out of that scale play conversation and saying like, listen, we have a premium audience here. And like, this is who you want to reach. This is the platform you want to be on. Like, I feel like a lot of publishers I've been speaking with lately have been in this, how do we get out of the scale competition? Like this hamster wheel of trying to like catch up to the platforms, and you're just never going to get there, or it's going to be really difficult.
Oh my God. You could add up every scale publisher in the United States and it would never have the reach of Facebook, right? Or I remember when at the Hollywood Reporter, we were always like, oh my, we're the biggest entertainment website. We have 22 million people, unique visitors a month on Comscore. But then I was always in the back of my mind, like, but to what end? Like, when are you so big? Like, it means something. Is it 25? Is it 30? What are the bragging rights exactly? And so that game felt, and then, you're doing these things that are just, you as an editor who cares about great things kind of kill you. You have people on the weekends and evenings writing things that you would not put out as your, put out front in the brand it's interesting with the Ankler and newsletters and businesses like Semaphore, like you're sort of, or Punchbowl, like you are really just the value is not in how much you can send to the audience, but the value is in how little you can send to the audience and the human curation of that. And also this thing that really drives everything we do, which is that you will not waste your time opening a single thing we send you. You might care about some of the stories and podcasts more than others, but it will be smart and we will absolutely not waste your time.
We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. So I'm curious too, because you mentioned Semaphore, and I had Justin Smith on the podcast at the end of last year, and he was saying like a big focus for 2024 is like they've established like their newsletter kind of output, but they want to create more of a destination website and like really kind of focus the, you know, ability to like, I guess, concentrate audiences on an owned and operated, given everything going on with social. Curious how you feel about that. I know you guys have like a website, but given your very like newsletter focused, like, is there anything about like the platform kind of strategy, like owned and operated, that you're kind of thinking about this year as well?
Yes. We actually started a podcast called anklerenjoy.com, and it is to house content from our events. And so for anyone out there in the business, events business, you know that there's the warm up, the event, and then the tail afterwards. And that's, we needed to create a place where those assets, the video or recordings from events, could live. And so we created a standalone website. So if you go to the anklerenjoy.com currently, you're getting the Substack page. And Substack's been great in that they have innovated with us. Like we're one of their biggest publishers. So they have been very responsive to our needs. But I do think there could be a day where we need to build a separate, theanklerenjoy.com. And the Bulwark has done something very similar to this, where they have a standalone website, which is basically a skin atop their Substack. I imagine we get to that point eventually.
And speaking of Substack, I noticed, or I saw, I think it was Axios reported that they're like getting into ad sales too, as like a platform. Like, you have your own sales, like head of sales, but like how are you thinking about like Substack's approach to adding advertising in?
I think, like, in the same way entertainment discovered this streaming in the last year, like, oh, we better sell some ads too, because we're leaving that on the table. I think Substack also is realizing that, but also sensing that in the demand from their audience. I think the demand from their users, their creators. And we took our podcasts off Substack last year. The platform was great, but we did want to sell advertising against them. So we put it on Megaphone on Spotify. And we also just wanted more data than we could get off Substack around our podcasts. So who knows? Maybe we return to Substack one day when they develop a more sophisticated podcasting platform. But other than that, you know, they're pretty great partners.
Speaking of podcasts too, because I feel like my colleague Sarah Guaglione covers podcasting a little bit more than I do, but I have spoken with a few guests on the podcast about podcasting, because we like to be meta here. There's this kind of, I don't know, I get mixed messages when it comes to podcast advertising. Like, some are enthusiastic about it. Others feel like it's a little bit of a tight area. I'm curious how you're building up, you know, podcast advertising as a revenue stream, but how has that market been? Have you been kind of finding success there, or are there like challenges with like audio?
It's funny. One of the things with with this audience, they want to, and perhaps again, a little unique to Los Angeles, it's a car culture, like through and through. And so people are always going from meeting to meeting or driving to and from, even in this age of still remote work. So we have, for example, this day we're recording that we have a sponsor on our podcast, Universal, and they're advertising Oppenheimer. It's a For Your Consideration ad for Oppenheimer. So that is selling at a very high premium. And I think it's okay I say this because it's in our sales material. So an ad on our podcast with a direct sale costs $17,500. And hopefully by the time your people are listening to this, we will be raising that price. So there's demand for the podcast in that sort of direct sales market. But when we get the programmatic money in from Megaphone, it's really sad. I mean, it is not seven. I wish that a month of programmatic on Spotify came to $17,500. But we believe that number will increase as we as the podcast grows. So I'm kind of answering your question, I hope.
Yeah, no, you are. I feel like that makes a lot of sense. Like the direct sold. Also, I didn't realize for your consideration was in audio as well. Granted, I am not their target audience. I am not the one that they're going to be putting their for your consideration ads towards. But the ones I've seen have always been like, you know, on a website or maybe like a social. Sometimes I see like posters for like Grammys. I think I've seen like album ones. But podcasting is interesting. Programmatic doesn't surprise me. I feel like I've been hearing that CPMs are falling, and then there's also an issue of like the programmatic has opened up a lot of inventory, so that money, that same amount of money, is being like reallocated to more podcasts than before, so it's a smaller share.
Well, it's the scarcity, you know, scarcity raises prices, and when it's flooded, prices go down. It's like any other marketplace. And so clearly everyone's aware of this crazy podcast correction that is still ongoing. And in the same way publishing doesn't have any magic bullets to make money, clearly podcasting does not either. And there's a way to do podcasting that, of course, is super cheap and you do it yourself. But the cost of sort of the proper production, the equipment, the fancy microphones you and I are talking on right now, like that it's not everyone can do that. And that is largely what's required of what I would say, what's required to attract premium advertisers.
I also did want to ask about, you are partnering with LA.
I say this is so awkward. So they used to be known out here as KPCC. So it like call letters that people know how to refer to radio by. Yeah. And so then they did a merger with LAist, which was a local website here that had quite an audience. And then everything was rebranded to LAist. And but it is the number one NPR station in Los Angeles. And we were... it was such a feeling of validation for us. They approached us about becoming their entertainment partner. And so they created a whole day, Entertainment Thursdays, where our people come on. And when I say our people, I mean our staff of six, but where our people come on and discuss the content that we've produced, or the news stories and analysis. And it's been great. So we are on Morning Edition on Thursday mornings. We're on All Things Considered in the afternoon, and on Air Talk, which is one of their shows that's been on LAist or KPCC for decades. So, and we'll be there when there's breaking news during the week. So I felt very much like the Anchor audience is aligned with the NPR audience, and vice versa.
Is this like a... I'm trying to remember, like, is it like an advertising or like an audience play, or like NPR doesn't have advertising, right?
Well, they do sponsorships, right? They do that.
Right. Right. Because okay. They're like nonprofit.
They're nonprofit, but something. But they also have to pay their bills, right? Or fund their programming. They are a nonprofit, but they do sell sponsorships against their content. But at this moment, and maybe this will be different by the time people are hearing this, at this moment, it is a pure editorial play. And for us, we're still a small business. And I know I said this in the Press Gazette story, but you either absolutely love the Anchor and live by it, or you've never heard of it. And that's, you know, one of our barriers to entry is our, you know, we cost $149 a year, and not everybody can subscribe to that. And so we would like to make ourselves you know, the subscription businesses rely on a funnel, and you need people constantly coming in from the top. And we convert at, I think, 21% off of our free, our so-called free list, or the people who sign up to subscribe. And so we immediately saw the value in building our funnel into the Ankler. And it's interesting. We've seen a bump even in the first 2 weeks in people signing up. Yeah.
Are your podcasts gated in any way, or are they open?
No, they're open, and that's also part of funnel building. And I think I think we really felt this acutely during the strikes. We wanted to make content available to people who needed information and who also, at the same time, were not making any money. And so we created a free newsletter at the time called Strikegeist, like Zeitgeist, but with strike, which nobody understood the joke really except us. We created a free product for people with that, a free newsletter, and that came out daily. And we felt like the podcast was a way to get the sort of high level notes of business information people needed to know during the strikes, and now every week.
Looking at subscription growth this year, how are you kind of thinking about adding to that like cohort of paid subscribers? Is it like, you know, you have your funnel that you've kind of built? Are you looking to expand that funnel? Are you looking to add like different tiers? Like, curious, like what that kind of go forward plan is with so many subscriptions available at this point too for people to be spending money on.
Right. So we launched a television newsletter called, let's see if you get this pun, Kaylee, Series Business. It's like not serious business, like serious but series business? Like TV series. Yeah. I see you laughing so hard. Yeah.
I get it.
But series business, and it's about the TV industry, the business of television. And Elaine Lowe, one of our writers, television writers, is writing that. It comes out every Monday, and it's already been a big hit in the ad market, which I'm happy to brag about. But also, it's editorially great, and so that goes out every Monday to Ankler subscribers. But just this week, actually, we created, this is our first experiment in different pricing. We converted the Strikegeist list into a standalone Series Business list, and are offering a subscription to just Series Business, knowing that there are people who only care about the TV market, for $49 a year. So $100 less. And then I have to tell you, because I haven't brought it up, about have a very expensive subscription to a product that is totally different, a separate business line called The Optionist. We love our puns. It's about optioning intellectual property the market and what's available. And we sell subscriptions to that for $2,500 a year. I would call that a success.
Yeah. And so you mentioned you got into the events business last year. I know that that is a very big opportunity that a lot of publishers have talked about for 2024, in addition to like last year, lots of, you know, desire for sponsors to be around people IRL again. How are you, like, I guess, does your events kind of fit into your subscriptions business at all? Or is this kind of like a separate model?
Separate model.
For some, okay. Tell me a little bit about events. Like, I'm curious about what that business looks like and how it's been working for you thus far.
Yeah, we started small. We did something called Page to Screen, In Conversation Page to Screen. And the very first event we did was me interviewing Judy Blume and the director of, yeah, and which was so cool. And the director of Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret. And we did it at a bookstore called Zibby's in Santa Monica. And Zibby's is owned by a woman named Zibby Owens, who's an author and runs Zibby Media. And she's also, because all things are connected, she's also the daughter of Steve Schwartzman from Blackstone. But she has put her energies and money towards keeping this small independent bookstore open and this thriving little spot for community in Los Angeles. Anyway, so that was the first event we did. And then before we knew it, we were doing an event with Netflix around All the Light We Cannot See, which was a limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize winning book with the cast. So Mark Ruffalo, Hugh Laurie, the two younger stars were on stage. There was a screening. And those assets can now be found on anklerenjoy.com. But really the big Megillah we did this in January, that was a huge success. We did, we partnered with a person named Tom Powers, who is like a god of documentary in New York. And he has a podcast, of course, and he runs Doc NYC, which is basically, it's like Comic-Con for docs, like you have to be there. And so we partnered with him in an event called Documentary Spotlight. We had our partners in that event were Netflix, Apple, Paramount, HBO Films. And so we, I'm sorry if I'm missing, Nat Geo. And so we were able to pull together this pretty impressive event with the right documentarians on stage. Many of them ended up getting, 3 out of the 5 were nominated for an Oscar. And so anyway, that's the sort of, we started with small swings and you'll start to see us take some bigger swings. There's a hunger out here for those kinds of events, and we believe we can do them really well.
And I mean, you just launched it. You mentioned like you're going from smaller swings to bigger swings, but is there like, are you looking at events as being like a, you know, meaningful contributor to revenue this
Absolutely.
Year?
Absolutely. Like I think both because people, I mean, one of the things in the RFP process, we're being asked for them, right? And so we need to figure out how to answer that. And we feel like we are absolutely leaving money on the table if we don't respond to that. But also, you know, if one of our mottos or guiding principles is don't pollute the inbox, where we want to branch out in ways that aren't just about sending you, you know, what time did Taylor Swift arrive, you know, will her jet make it from Tokyo stories or whatever. So we want to be smart about how we branch out. And, but we also want, and I know this sounds like such a cliche and so scaled media of the teens, but like we want Anklr to be everywhere. We want it to be accessible to people where they can reach it. And hope that all of that drives back to the core businesses of, subscription and advertising.
To wrap up this conversation, because I know we're getting close to time, but I did want to ask about, you mentioned you have like a 6-person team. Like this sounds like a lot going on for you guys. Like, how are you thinking about growth this year and like, you know, either adding staff to maintain these new areas or, you know, adding more inventory? Like what are you thinking about like from a growth perspective?
Since we launched in 2022, like I have definitely brought like a depression mentality into building the business. And so I think it's funny because when I was editor-in-chief of Us Weekly and then ran editorial for The Hollywood Reporter and Billboard, it was always like a little insulting to me. Like it was almost like paternalistic. I was never given visibility into the budgets and into how money was being spent. And it was sort of like, okay, edit girl, go do your edit things. And so this has been a crash course in Excel. and I finally am an Excel master. So it's just really old fashioned. We've been profitable from day one. When we become more profitable, we can commit more money to bring in new talent. And so we've built slowly like that. But I think this year is the year where we're going to need to bring in like a real marketing team, or I guess, and by team, I mean person. All our subscriptions have been organic. We have never done any marketing around subscriptions. So I believe we need to do some subscription marketing. And then I want us to continue to think broadly about how entertainment is defined. I think you see from the headlines, entertainment now encompasses lots of things. It encompasses gaming, obviously sports, obviously international. We just brought on a London correspondent around in television. So we want to be mindful of not being so myopic about the fact that entertainment is just what you see out my window here, which is palm trees in Los Angeles.
Yeah, no, that's a really great point too. Just based on, again, like with the strikes, how different areas of media have been like filling the gaps, so to speak, and like sports it being a big year with the Olympics and stuff like that. Like that definitely makes sense. And the last thing I wanted to ask about like goals is, because I don't think I actually said it, but in the Press Gazette story, you're now at like 74,000 subscribers. Like, is that paid subscribers or like what's your goal?
No, I wish
for
it were. Okay. If they would all like to subscribe, they can insert their credit cards today, please. Our goal is our next goal is 100,000, like a list of 100,000. We'll get there probably by mid-year, I hope. And then just continuously convert them. And we're thinking about everything, including, it's so crazy. It makes me insane. Like, you know, people take out one subscription and share it with their office. We'll definitely be doing our version of the great Netflix password crackdown. Like we believe, I can't stand all people who talk about, you know, oh my God, the death of media is so expensive, and then they don't support it. Sorry, like you, like pay up, and especially in this, yeah, no, pay up. This isn't done. This isn't a charity, and also, in an industry where like basically agents, and the whole everyone's demanding to get paid for their creative work, and therefore we would like to be too, but we are. So I'm not complaining. I'm just griping.
No, I get it. I think that's the biggest frustration when I talk to my non-media friends about, oh, I can't access this article. And I'm like, well, you know, the person who wrote it is not going to get paid if you're not paying for it. You know what I mean? Like, you need to support the media that's you're saying you really want to consume.
Exactly. Right. Don't be sad about the LA Times and the state of it and then not subscribe to it like Angelinos. Like, sorry. Right. So,
yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. I mean, this has been a very fun conversation. I feel like the 45 minutes has flown by, but thank you for joining me on the podcast and allowing me to, I don't know, feel connected to the Hollywood glamour for a little bit as I speak to you from freezing cold New Jersey.
Come out. We'll go to a red carpet and you can see the quote unquote magic in action.
Fabulous. Yeah. Yes. They're just going to be shooing me off the red carpet.
Not at all. Like, who are you? Not at all. I'll tell them you have 200 million followers on Instagram or TikTok, and then you can do some moves.
Yeah, not the reality of 600 that I have on Instagram, but that's all right. Well, thank you so much, Janice. This has been so much fun.
Thanks, Kaylee. Great to talk to you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Digiday Podcast. If you enjoyed it, please leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. And for even more coverage on digital media, ad tech, social platforms, and more, please visit digiday.com.